This hour of the Jason Rancho brought to you by Northwest Safe. A lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. It's time to find out what's trending.
What's trending in Trumplandia?
Kirstjen Nielsen, is out as Homeland Security Secretary. It appears that it was a forced exit where she was allowed to resign to save some face. She disagreed with the president for a while now, that according to multiple reports. We started to hear this rumor several months ago, back in December of last year. NBC is now reporting that there was significant disconnect between the two on the family separation policy, where the president wanted to be a lot more harsh than Kirstjen Nielsen. And part of that is on the president, because the president wants to truly be harsh, but he definitely doesn't like being treated like he's being too harsh. And so he sent some mixed messages. When you send sign an executive order saying no to the family separations after kind of pushing Nielsen into doing the family separations, it can be confusing. Now, beyond that, President Trump never quite got along with her. She was someone who had a fan in the prior chief of staff in John Kelly, and that's who maybe, perhaps, she was more loyal to. So it should come as no surprise that she is now out. Now, despite the fact that she was pushed out, she's handling this incredibly professionally. She's not bagging on the president. She's actually giving him kudos.
I just want to thank the president again for the tremendous opportunity to serve this country. I'm forever grateful and proud of the men and women of DHS who work so hard every day to execute their missions and to protect the homeland. I really look forward to continuing to support them from the outside. I've spent the last 24 hours since yesterday talking with government officials, with administration officials, members of Congress to ensure a smooth transition. As you know, DHS has a vast array of missions. I want to make sure that we continue to execute them all with excellence through the transition.
And I expect that that's going to happen. Now, what the timeline looks like, it's a little unclear. John Decker from Fox News Radio is going to join us from the White House at 5:15 to give us a little bit better idea. But let's be clear, we're at a point where there are a lot of interim positions that have not actually been fulfilled by someone on a permanent basis. That's reportedly how the president likes it. Now, the White House press deputy secretary, Hogan Gidley, was on Fox News this morning. And I have to say, he was involved in some significant spin. And it's spin that I think is little disingenuous.
I do find it kind of interesting that the media is so focused on what happened behind the scenes with the resignation of Secretary Nielsen instead of worrying about what's actually happening at the border. And we have a crisis down there, an emergency, and the media refuses to focus on that, but instead wants to talk about palace intrigue. Listen, she offered a resignation, she resigned, and the president moved forward because, look, this is probably the most important position right now in the federal government, and he put someone in place in Kevin McAleenan who knows the issue. He'll do a great job there. We've got to address what's going on at the border.
Okay, that's spin. The media hasn't been approaching the border crisis with a whole bunch of honesty. I agree with that, and I think that is legitimate criticism of the media. But this obviously, this is a huge story. This is a big story. A cabinet member has resigned slash been forced out. Another one. And I think that requires our attention, and we get to ask some questions. Now, this is going to be spun by some folks in the media as turmoil in the White House. And there's, I suppose, some truth to that, but only when you're talking about it, technically speaking, because this is what happens when you have a CEO as president. In fact, this is in a lot of ways why a lot of people like the idea of a President Trump. You've got politicians who will keep these cabinet members in no matter their performance, because by firing them or pushing them out, it looks bad. It looks like your White House is in turmoil. The president presumably is saying, hey, you do X, Y, and Z. If you don't do X, Y, and Z, I'm going to treat you the way I would treat any employee, which is you're out. You're out of a gig if you can't do what I want. Now, whether or not that's the majority of the concern, I don't know. But I don't look at this as necessarily, or at least inherently, as a bad thing, no matter what the national media wants to turn this into, CNN chief legal analyst Jeffrey Toobin.
But Kirstjen Nielsen, I think, is a great example of what happens when you go to work for Donald Trump. He is the great reputation killer. I mean, here's this woman who, you know, was a reasonably admired bureaucrat. And for the rest of her life, people will look at her and think, oh, that's the woman who put children in cages.
Except she didn't put anyone in cages. The cages photo that was getting all of the attention of people like Jeffrey Toobin happened under Obama. And you don't hear the same nonsense coming from Jeffrey Toobin of, oh, you know what, the one stain on the Obama presidency is the kids in cages. No, what you hear is, oh, Obama was scandal-free. But that's what you can generally expect from this kind of media. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Big picture.
So Washington Democrats announced over the weekend that they're going to use the presidential primary system to allocate delegates to different candidates. They're going to do this instead of the precinct caucuses, which are the worst. Caucuses are the worst. You have to be uber involved. You got to show up all day. You got to debate a whole bunch of lunatics to get your way. It's just not an efficient use of our time. Now, this move, even though it's impacting the Democrats, I would argue, number one, is very good for Washington. Number two, is good-ish for Democrats. And number three, potentially bad news for the president. Potentially. Now, the reason why this is good news for Washington State is really simple. This brings in a whole bunch of money into the economy. The whole system, all in, brings a ton of money into the economy. March 10 is when we're going to have our primaries. That means at that point, you're going to have a bunch of candidates still competing. You're not going to have all 18, 19, or 20 of them, obviously. At that point, Jay Inslee will have likely hung up the campaign, decided to quit. In fact, I expect that's going to happen probably after the next couple weeks. But you've got about, what, 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 candidates in at that point. They're going to be running a lot of ads. They're going to be spending a lot of money in Seattle and Tacoma and Spokane and the Tri-Cities. They're going to be spending money in Vancouver, or at least in Portland, that's going to bleed into Vancouver. At the same time, they're going to set up campaign infrastructure here. What does that mean? It means they're going to be renting office space, money into the economy. They're going to be hiring people and getting volunteers, money into the economy, not just from the payroll taxes on those employees. But what do those volunteers and workers do? They go down to the coffee shop down the street multiple times a day. They're going to use local vendors to create different ads, flyers that they can put up. They're going to be renting chairs and tables and doing catering from companies that are local for the events. This is all good news. On the whole, this brings a lot of money, millions of dollars into the economy. So that's good for Washington State. Number two, it's good-ish for Democrats. It depends on your perspective. If you are a mainstream, more moderate Democrat, this is great news because it takes some of the power away from the extremists within the Democratic Party. To be in the caucus system in general, you tend to be kind of crazy on both sides. You're far, far, far to left. This is when the activists come out. In a system, by the way, during a primary, activists tend to disproportionately show up as it relates to the everyday voter. We stupidly, for the most part, decide to vote only in the national elections. So if you're a moderate Democrat, this gives you a little bit of power back, just a little bit. And that's good news. But here's where it's potentially bad news for the Republicans. This is bad news because we're giving more power to the mainstream, more moderate Democrats. If they're able to eke out a win for a quote-unquote mainstream Democrat, like a Joe Biden, who, it doesn't matter what you think of him, he is viewed as a mainstream Democrat. What ends up happening is, if that person wins because of something like this, that's harder for Trump to defeat. I still think Trump has a leg up on all the competition, no matter, because he's the president, and you always go into it unless something catastrophic happens with the economy. The president always has a little bit of a bump, a little bit of an inherent lead. Now, if you take out the moderate power and you keep it in the hands of the crazies, well, the crazies might be stupid enough on the Democratic side to give the nomination to Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren. That's going to be easier for the president to win, right? So anytime that we make it easier for moderate Democrats to have a voice in the primary, that could hurt us. Assuming that we have, at the time, a moderate candidate. Now, it doesn't matter what you will say about Trump at this point. He's a mainstream Republican because he's the president. So I just think that kind of stuff is important to pay attention to. We'll have more conversation on this throughout the show as well. But because I know we're running low on time, let's quickly find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
So it's not only the Mariners that are having an amazing run to their season. We know they're, what, 9-2 at this point, the Mariners. They're doing really, really well. But it's also arguably the more important sport, certainly the sport that I care the most about, and I want to spend just a little bit of time to... Why?
Why what?
Why are we going to traffic? I've got at least... I wanted 20 seconds to talk about the Sounders.
Well, I'll give you a couple, but we got to hit traffic here, like, really quickly.
Yeah, what happens if we don't hit traffic right at this very second?
Then we have to talk about soccer.
So you admit that you're just trying to not get me to talk about soccer?
Well, no, I mean, that's part of it, but we also, it's 3:15, so we have to get to traffic.
You know, the Sounders are 5 games unbeaten.
Are they? That's awesome.
I know it's awesome.
You know, there's traffic on the roads right now that we need to get to.
Yeah, but I'm just saying.
Well, you know, you can say a lot of things, but, you know, the important say comes from traffic, and that's, like, now.
You know, this is my show, right? Do I have no power?
Well, I mean, until there's traffic.
Okay, let's get you home the right way with right-way traffic. You know, not for nothing, they won over the weekend.
What's trending at home?
A school levy cleared a key vote in Olympia. This is bad news for those of us who actually care about education, spending the amount of money, the millions that we're pouring into education without seeing any meaningful results in some cases. This bill is being pushed by teachers' unions because they want to make it so they can raise the percentage of how much schools can collect in local property taxes. Now, it's ridiculous on its face. Because it means they can take more of your money without showing any results for it. It disproportionately targets people who don't have kids like myself. But moreover, it gives more money to teachers to do less work. And most likely, the money won't go to charter schools because teachers' unions hate charter schools. They see it as direct competition. They say they care about your kids. They only care about the kids that go to their school because then they actually make some money off of it. The unions make money off of it. This is ridiculous. School districts should not get to raise local property taxes, period, under no circumstances. We have a legislature for this. We all live within our means. Unions don't like to do that. Government agencies don't like to do that. But understand that when we set up budgets for ourselves, you know what we try not to do? Go over that budget. You want to know why? Because we don't have the money necessary to cover those budget overruns. The state doesn't care because they can always just go back to us and take more of our money. Luckily, up until this point, we've had a cap on the amount of money you can take out of these property taxes. But they're saying, and they're doing this under the guise of we're trying to recession-proof the entire education system. Because when there's a recession, we want to make sure that we still get enough money to take care of our kids. Understand, this is not a recession issue. This isn't a recession issue whatsoever. They're going to go ask for more from property taxes, regardless of whether or not there's a recession. Understand that if all things are equal, when we're in a recession, no one wants to pay extra property taxes, right? But they want you to pay more property taxes. This is a problem. And this is something that you can do something about. Because in the Senate, this bill was defeated. In the House, it just cleared the Appropriations Committee. So we've said we're no longer going to be the silent majority in Washington State anymore. No more will we be known as the silent majority, the people who we all generally hold the same position, but we don't really talk about it too much for fear that some Seattle activist might yell at us or label us certain things. Yeah, no more. We're now the vocal majority. On this, we have the power. We have the power so long as you're willing to actually do some work for it. So this is what I want you to do. I want you to text me the keyword contact to 1-800-465-8770, and I'm going to send you the names and phone numbers for 3 Democrats who represent purple districts. I want you to politely call them and tell them to vote no on this bill. I put the name of the bill into the actual text message. All you have to do is text the keyword contact to 1-800-465-8770. I'll have you contact today Shelley Kloba, Jared Mead, and Sharon Wiley. These are all Democrats who come from districts that are purple. It's that simple. You make the phone call and you make it very clear to them that you're passionate about this. You don't want to see school districts have this kind of power. You don't want to force people who don't even have kids to pay even higher property taxes in areas of the state where it's already incredibly expensive to live right now. And if these lawmakers decide to ignore your voice, not only if you live in the district are you going to vote against them when they're up for re-election, but you, if you don't live in the district, you're going to donate money to whomever declares against them. They ignore you at their own political peril. Text the keyword contact to 1-800-465-8770. Don't be the person who complains about the direction of our state via some snarky tweet. If all you're willing to do is send an angry tweet, this segment probably is not for you. We have so much power that we cede to these political activists on the left. They're doing this. They're scaring people into thinking that they're the louder voices because they've got more people on their side. No, they're just loud voices. We've got the people on our side. We don't have to have control in Olympia to have some semblance of control over policy. We just have to target a few Democrats to get them to see things the way we need them to see them. And let me tell you, you will be effective in this if you make it very, very clear that they do not get your support, your money, your attention when they run for re-election. Jared Mead, Democrat over in Everett, Lake Stevens area, he's brand new. He's brand new. He should not be the puppet of the Democratic Party. He should be listening to his district, which is overwhelmingly purple. He owes it to you, as do all of these lawmakers, to defend their positions when you call. We're not going to do emails. Emails are really, really easy for them to ignore. Phone calls are not. We have successfully killed bad legislation by actually calling. Be that one person who makes that one phone call to that one member of the state legislature. Spend just 1 minute on the phone with them to passionately explain your position. And tell them there are political consequences when they ignore the voters. I promise you that this will work. I promise you that if you all do this, it'll be worth your time and energy and effort. Every single person who is listening to my voice right now has 1 minute. Every single person has a minute. You have multiple minutes. So do something with that time. Don't just be the one who complains. Be the person who's going to step up and do something about it. Leftists do this all the time. Why do we let them? Why is it that for the longest time, we were known as the silent majority? It drives me nuts. Why is that okay? Why should we be silent if we're the majority? Shouldn't we speak up? Shouldn't they listen to what it is we have to say? Shouldn't the unions not speak louder than the voters? I get that unions put a whole bunch of money into the pockets of politicians who end up voting for them, but you know what? You know what we also need? You know what they need, excuse me? They need us to actually vote for them and to donate more money because we have way more money than the unions will ever have. The unions are not going to be able to funnel a whole bunch of money into every single person who's running, either in the Senate or the House. They rely, those politicians, they rely on us. Because we've got the numbers. So let's start acting like it. Text the keyword CONTACT to 1-800-465-8770. And please remember one thing. Always be civil. Be passionate, but be civil. It takes one person to act out in an untoward way for them to paint that very wide brush against all of us. So don't fall for that trap. That's what they want. Be reasonable, be passionate, be civil. Text the keyword CONTACT to 1-800-465-8770. That's the NumBetter Tax Resolution Hotline. I will send you the numbers that you need for three state lawmakers, all Democrats, all from purple districts, for you to tell them to vote no on HB 2140. You'll explain why. And you'll explain the political consequences if they choose to ignore the vocal majority from now on. They work for us, not the other way around. Let's act like it. Let's actually act like their bosses for once. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Ryan Saavedra is a reporter with The Daily Wire. Ryan was just blocked on Twitter by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. When Trump blocked people, it was declared illegal. When AOC does it, not really hearing the outrage machine coming from the media. Ryan's going to stop by when we come back. Welcome back to The Jason Rand Show. He's been calling her out on Twitter since she became a congresswoman. Now Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez decided to block Daily Wire columnist Ryan Saavedra on Twitter. And it's almost certainly illegal. Ryan Saavedra joins me now. Ryan, hello. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So what triggered the block? Because you go after Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez pretty frequently.
Yeah, so I typically cover far left politicians, and she's kind of the face of that movement. So, it's funny because I don't really even follow her on social media accounts. I just have people, anytime she says something stupid, send me messages and tell me I need to take a look at it. So
When she was speaking on Friday at Al Sharpton's National Action Network event in New York, she had used an accent that she had never used in the past. And I mean, I cover her extensively. So again, you know, I would know if she's used this accent. Out of the dozens of hours of tape I've watched of her, I've never seen or heard her use anything like this. And she's talking to a predominantly black audience and she's using this accent and it comes off as really patronizing. So I put a video up on Twitter that got a lot of views. I think it's like at 16 million views now. And she got pretty upset by it, and so she responded. She responded to somebody who had criticized the video that I put out, and she was basically saying that, you know, she wasn't using an accent, and this is the way she always talks. Well, she gave a couple examples of times where she claimed that she had used this accent, which were at a speech that she did. Trying to rally support against then Supreme Court Justice nominee Brett Kavanaugh and at a women's march event in New York. Well, I went and I checked the tapes on both of those and she never used an accent. Yeah. So, you know, I responded back to her saying, yeah, you're a liar. You never said these things at the speeches. Here are the links. And that was finally the straw that broke the camel's back, and that's what got her to finally block me. So.
Well, what's funny about all of this is it's racist what she did. She goes and talks in front of a black audience. She takes on a different dialect because she thinks that somehow is going to allow her to connect with this black audience. It's similar to Hillary Clinton pulling the exact same thing when she was speaking to a predominantly black audience, and she goes, "I've none been so tired." It's like, no, that's condescending. It's wrong.
Yeah, and you know, and it's funny because when her initial excuse when she came out was that at an event she did, at an MLK event she did earlier this year, and I'd have to go back and pull the tape, she revealed in an interview how she does her Twitter game, okay, how she structures what she tweets about. And she frames everything in one of three ways. It's either an example of racism, sexism, or classism. Okay. So she, you know, she initially came out and she was, you know, she was claiming that the political right, okay, which that's, you know, that's, she always attacks the political right, that they were trying to distort and deflect. She wouldn't say what they were trying to distort or deflect from, but she was basically, I forget the rest of what she said, but it was something along the lines of, you know, this is, you know, something that privileged people don't have to worry about and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it took her a whole 24 hours of reading the responses of some of her supporters who went out and, you know, did some digging on, you know, how they could try to explain this away to, you know, come out and claim that she was quote unquote code switching, which, you know, as someone who's Latino myself, I have never heard of that term. I talked to numerous, you know, tons of my friends who were Latino or black or, you know, just, I mean, even friends of mine that are white, and none of them have ever heard of code switching.
Never heard of it myself.
So she's coming out saying, oh, it was just code switching. And it's like, okay, so number one, if this is the way you normally talk, why are you having to defend yourself? Like, if you're having to defend yourself and explain yourself, you're losing. Okay, so everybody knows, so people know this is not the way you talk. Okay, this code switching thing, by the way, this is something that only people on the political left will ever be given the benefit of quote-unquote code switching.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. If a white person or a Republican or a conservative, actually, it doesn't even matter if you're white. It's just about what you're about. It's just about what your ideology is. So
if you did it,
right,
look, Ryan, if you did what she did, you would be immediately called out as a racist.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, this whole thing is just, it's ridiculous. And she actually got quite, I mean, even though there were people that came out and supported her and, you know, said it was this code switching thing, there were a lot of people, a lot of prominent African Americans who came out and said, no, that was absolutely racist.
Yeah. So she ends up blocking you on Twitter, which I'm told is illegal. Lawmakers are not allowed to just block anyone from seeing their tweets. unless it goes into a harassment realm, which I suppose she would probably try to argue, but you were clearly criticizing, and that's exactly what the federal court said you can't do, which is block someone for criticizing you.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, and the other dynamic of that, too, is going to be, you know, they would obviously look at the fact that, oh, okay, you know, she, you know, the head of the DNC has said she's the future of the party. She gets more airtime than any other member of Congress. Yeah. She's more well-known than any other member of Congress, and she has a larger Twitter account than anyone else in the House. Okay, so she's not exactly some, you know, unknown, you know, person that people are fact checking. And, you know, the other thing too is I'm a reporter. So, you know, me commenting and calling her out for things that she says that are not true, you know, she'll claim that's harassment, but that's not really harassment. But no, I actually had a couple of, law firms actually reach out and offer to, sue her, pro bono on my behalf. And, one of them went and looked and they came back and said they may have spoken too early because apparently the again, I don't know whether or not this is true, but this is what, you know, this lawyer told me. They went back and they read the case, the federal case against Trump. And what they said was that the people that Trump had blocked, he had blocked them from his personal account and his government account. And it was the fact that he blocked them from the government account that's what got him in trouble. She blocked me from her personal account. But, you know, it's something where even if that was even if that was not allowed.
Well, it's
I'm not sure I'm going to make a huge.
Yeah, but let's be clear about something. I mean, it's not simply her personal account. It's also her account has a blue check mark. It's the one where she has all of her followers in the bio for her account. It says she's a congresswoman for New York's 14th. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, she clearly is violating certainly the spirit.
Well, yeah. I mean, she has her congressional account, but she rarely uses that.
Yeah,
like she's only tweeted from it for a few times. But you know, on her part, and I would say this to anybody out there who, you know, is a public figure who is in the media spotlight, and you have reporters that report on you. You know, obviously, you're going to have reporters who like you and who give you favorable coverage, and you're going to have reporters who are more critical of you. And the worst thing you can do is with reporters that are critical of you is do stuff like this where you block them or you try to prevent them from, you know, getting access to your information or seeing what you're saying or doing. Because when you do that, all you're doing is you're telling them. I mean, it's like throwing chum in the water and deciding you're going to go swim in the water.
You're making it worse.
Okay, all you just did is you just tipped off the sharks. Okay. And so, you know, it's something where, you know, all that really did is it signaled to me that, hey, you know, I need to pay closer attention to what she's saying now.
Yeah, okay, exactly. Because she's got something to hide, and she's I mean, what's interesting about this is she's especially thin-skinned, where given the fact that she uses Twitter in a similar way that President Trump uses Twitter, you wouldn't expect her to be so thin-skinned. So I kind of want you to sue just because I don't like her and I like you, but we'll see how this goes. Of course, we'll be following along with you. If you want, go ahead and add Ryan Saavedra on Twitter. It's one of the best Twitter feeds out there, just to stay up to date on some of the crazy things that are being said by the left. Real Saavedra is the account. Saavedra spelled Saavedra. And of course, we've got the link to all of his stuff on my Twitter feed at Jason Rance. Ryan Saavedra has been joining us. He's with the Daily Wire. For more on his stuff, dailywire.com. But of course, also follow him on Twitter at Real Saavedra, Saavedra. Ryan, my friend, thank you so much for stopping by. It's always a pleasure.
Yep, I appreciate you having me.
Welcome back to the Jason Rance Show. Thank you so much for tuning in, telling all your friends. Really appreciate it. We've been telling people to make sure that they get more involved in what's going on in Olympia, because there is a bill right now, HB 2140, that would allow school districts to raise the property tax levy that they'd want. They'd be able to raise the percentage of money coming from these property taxes to go into the district. I think that is a bad move. I'm not a fan of that. Republicans all across the state of Washington don't think this is a good move. And so I'm asking you to contact your state lawmakers to tell them that you don't want them voting in favor of HB 2140. And we've decided to target today three individual lawmakers, all Democrats, because if we're going to win this, we need Democrats. I'm not worried about the Republicans. We need Democrats on our side. The same exact bill died in the Senate. Let's make sure it dies in the House by going towards Democrats who represent purple districts, because they know that they can't simply just give a yes to whatever progressive activists in Seattle want. And so because of you, I've been hearing multiple people telling me that Representative Shelley Kloba's office says they tend to agree with us on this, that she's leaning in the no direction. Let's give her a little bit of a gentle and civil nudge further and further into the no on HB 2140. Text the keyword contact to 1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword and just the keyword contact to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you over their contact information, three House representatives, all Democrats in purple districts, so you can tell them to vote no on HB 2140, because if they don't, they will pay a political price. We're no longer the silent majority. We are the vocal majority. Speaking of the vocal majority, I guess enough people liked Prince, the artist formerly known as, enough that they ended up giving him an exhibit over at the Seattle Museum of Pop, POMA. What are they calling it now? MoPo or whatever? Mo something? The Museum of Pop Culture. And it's interesting because this is supposed to showcase how Prince became who he became and became this sort of cultural phenomenon for us in this country. On display are costumes, instruments, artwork, photos that belong to Prince. He died, of course, a few years ago, 3 years ago. Hundreds of his songs are going to be there. In fact, museum curator Brooks Peck tells Cairo 7 TV some of the tracks were never even released.
We would often work on a song, put it aside for years, bring it out again, reproduce it, rework it. So some of those things were probably just works in progress that he didn't get to complete.
Can I just be honest for a second and then we can move on? All of Prince's music sound like they were works in progress and not really completed.
Wow.
Prince sucks.
Whoa.
Just saying it. I mean, we're 3 years past his death. I can just be open about it. Prince is not good. Prince is not good. He always sucked. Now, maybe at the time he was good, like when he would release an album. None of his songs transcend the time that it was released. They all sound incredibly dated. There's not like you can listen to... There are certain bands that historically everyone says is really, really good. Yeah, this is awful.
Yeah.
No, this is awful.
I like Tom Jones' version a little better.
It's just awful. Because I picked out three songs completely at random off of the Best of Prince album that Amazon had. These are all random. I've only heard of one of the songs of the three, but they're all supposedly significant hits, and I picked the ones that had the highest popularity rate. This one is called Work. This is not good. This is not good. It just sounds like crappy 80s music.
I mean, I think a lot of people disagree with you. I don't have an opinion either way, but a lot of people disagree with you.
I'm sure that they do, but I think they like what Prince stands for and his cultural image at the time and what he meant. It was sort of like, we could all acknowledge, whether or not you like Madonna's music, she was a cultural icon because of what she did to the industry and what she meant at the time in the context of which the music was put out. But this is, and I have no doubt that that's what Prince represents, but this is just not good. This sounds good to you?
I'm sure it sounds great to a lot of people, but I mean, I don't.
It sounds like noise.
It's a song. There's so many songs worse than that. I mean,
this is just awful. It's just awful. There's no musical talent in this.
Oh, geez.
There just isn't.
Okay, hold
on. He sings at a high pitch. Good for you. This is the only song I've ever heard of from the Best of album. This is just not a good song. Like, it's not even a good... The kind you find in a secondhand... It's not even a good lyric.
You're taking this, like his music way overboard on how bad it is. I mean, it's music.
No, it's awful. It's awful. It suffers from a disproportionate number of people who pretend it's the best versus how the quality is in its actuality. Meaning, you've got more people who are saying this is the best, which is absurd because it's not that good.
Okay, you're using the Red Robin argument.
The
Red Robin argument is it's bad because it doesn't live up to the hype. I mean, I could get with that.
No. I'm saying it doesn't deserve the hype.
Every song that you played, I would imagine hearing on like a classic hits radio station.
Yeah, and those radio stations suck.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they suck.
No, they don't.
If you play Prince music, if that's what you're passionate about, you have bad taste in music. Now, it's okay to have bad taste in music. I'm okay with that. I'm not saying, well, I am. I'm a bad example because I've got great taste in music. I'm not saying that just because you like it makes you a bad person. It just means you have bad taste in music. That's all.
I don't think anyone was assuming that. Well, no, because people tend
to take these kinds of things exceptionally personally, right? I mean, this, oh my God, you don't like my favorite artist, my favorite band? What are you saying about? I'm not saying anything about you beyond your favorite artist sucks. And that's all I'm saying. So don't go see them at the Museum of Pop Culture, whatever it is. Wait until they've got Jimi Hendrix back or Nirvana back. Do that stuff. Skip the Prince. Prince sucks.
I don't think there is more than 3% of the United States that think like that. I think you are in the minute that says not just that Prince isn't good, but to say he sucks.
Yeah, he sucks.
I think you are in a very minute population.
It doesn't matter. So are Mensa members.
So are what?
Mensa members.
What's a Mensa member?
Oh, jeez. Why don't you spend the commercial break Googling? You can Google that. Because that was a good joke that you ruined by not understanding it because of your age.
Sorry, I'm young and hip.
Or lack of intellect.
I don't think that.
1-800.
You're saying Prince sucks.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, I'm willing to bet people will agree, and you can text me. 1-800-465-8770. Agree with me that Prince sucked, or disagree and be wrong. Well, 1-800-465-8770. Prince was awful.
You could say he doesn't live up to the
hype. Excuse me. I know what I can and cannot say. I'm saying he sucks. End of story.
He sucks.
End of story. There's no redeeming value to his music in 2019. 1-800-465-8770. The None Better Tax Resolution Hotline.